My name's Terry Thornton. I'm curator of education here at the Modern, and this is part of our Sundays with the Modern series. They're 1 o'clock tours most Sundays. I invite anybody who's interested to check the website to get the schedule. For example, next Sunday, Chris Powell will be here. Really talented and thoughtful artist will be here to talk about perhaps the Vernon Fisher Show, perhaps the Permanent Collection, or a combination. Today we have Marty Walker with us, and she is here to talk about the Vernon Fisher, our special exhibition, Vernon Fisher, Kmart Conceptualism. And just quickly, I want to introduce you to Marty so you have some sense of maybe where she's coming from. Although I think her comments will be a better indicator of that than my introduction. But nevertheless, I want you to know that Marty went to Missouri State, where she received her BFA in photography before coming to UNT in Denton, where she actually studied with Vernon Fisher. There she received a painting degree, MFA in painting. She then worked... received the Dozier Travel Grant in 1998, and with that she went to Europe, where she was stayed for 3 months, painted and traveled. It was at a very lucrative time in terms for an artist, in that it was the year that Documenta, Venice Biennale, the Sculpture Park, and Munster, and all of that was going on. So it was a really rich time. She had some revelations with that. Came back and worked for Nancy Whiteneck, who some may know, who still has the gallery Conduit in Dallas. Again, more revelations for a young artist, and decided that she was in fact interested in the business end of art. She became more interested in other people's work and how she could talk about and make that accessible, and then became interested, took about a five-year break from art, where, well, I don't know if it's actually a break, but she worked with computers and graphic design before opening her own gallery, Marty Walker Gallery, in Dallas in 2006. And I have to say, as somebody from this community, that has been an enormous contribution to the DFW area. We've all benefited from having Marty's insights, the artists she's brought to us, and the exhibitions. For example, now the exhibition is Small Objects.
It's a Small Works Invitational. It's a small sculpture by 15 different artists, some right. local, some national.
And I have to say that you know, not that that name indicates anything in particular, but in fact, it's really one of the most profound collections of works that I've seen in a long while. So, and that's up through
December 23rd.
So, yeah, not a lot of time, but yeah. I invite you, if you get a chance, to get out and see that. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Marty so she can give us her insights into the work of Vernon Fisher. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for coming, and thanks, Terry, for the nice introduction, and thanks to the Modern for hosting this just unbelievable exhibition. It means a lot to me from a professional point of view, and also a personal point of view as well. This last week has been... just the timing of everything has been really interesting. My father, who's a sculptor, has recently been diagnosed with something similar to Alzheimer's, and so I've been watching him sort of decline on a cognitive level. And so I really grew up with this staunch modernist. And when I went to University of North Texas, I came with all that, and I really didn't know how to access postmodernism at that time. And so I studied with Vernon, and I wouldn't have an art gallery without Vernon, without studying with Vernon Fisher. I mean, I would say the two biggest influences on my professional career has been my father and Vernon Fisher, and this sort of interesting sort of transformation at the University of North Texas, because, you know, you either kind of have to read postmodernism with that construct in mind, or you read art as modernist with that construct in mind. But when you try to do as what I tried to do as a painter, taking classes at North Texas, I was completely confused and completely lost, and I'd go to my dad's every other weekend, just almost in tears, going, I'm so confused, I don't understand. And then he'd come at my, trying to help me with this sort of modernist ideal, and then I'd go back, and then there would be Vernon to deal with, but it was actually a fantastic experience, because it was the point in my life where I had to sort of let my dad's influence go and sort of come into my own as a painter. And so Vernon sort of helped me kind of move along in that. So yesterday, I've been out of town all week, and I've been a little stressed out because I wanted to come up here and sort of prepare. And so I got back into town about 3 o'clock and came over here and got a chance to really sit with the work. I mean, being an art dealer, you're constantly sort of skimming because you see so much, and you just have a different filter than, say, you know, Kathy Webster would have as an artist, you know. So it was one of the rare occasions where I got to really sit with the work and think about it, and think about how much Vernon has just affected how I think, you know, how I think about art. And that was sort of the missing component for me, just making paintings. You know, there was always something missing for me. It didn't have enough meat to it or something. I didn't quite know how to, you know, get there on my own. So a lot of people have talked. There have been many talks about Vernon's work from critics and artists and people who can probably talk about his work much more eloquently than I can. But I can say that, the first time I saw Vernon's work, it was incredibly intimidating, you know. I didn't quite know how to access it. And, you know, all these things that I thought, you know, like, well, why would you use text in a painting, you know? If you can't paint it, just, you know, it's almost like cheating, you know? I mean, that was like my first thing I had to confront, was all this text. And it really started breaking down my notions of what art was, and it really started challenging me and helping me grow. So the graduate school process for me was really a process of total deconstruction and despair, and then sort of building back up from that, and sort of building from the inside out, you know. The really great thing about Vernon is he had a way of teaching that you didn't know he was teaching at the time, you know. He just had this sort of back door way of transferring information to you, and there are things that I just, you know, thought about. Well, I'll go to this one painting in here. So, before we go any further, I just want to say that Vernon never made me cry in his critique. You know, that was like the big, rumor in grad school, is like, ooh, you know, you're taking a class from Vernon, man, you know. And
you got through that.
I was really scared, though. I mean, I was really scared. I mean, you saw that picture of Vernon. He's kind of got a very intense presence about him. But, you know, the first day in his class, I watched him walk across the room. I think I was trembling, actually, you know, and I didn't want him to ask me anything. I just needed to check him out a little bit. And so he sits down, and I look at his shoes, and he's got these white tennis shoes with fluorescent orange shoelaces, you know? And I was like, this might be okay. So one of the things that was really funny to me was that he would come in several times. I only had one semester. I mean, this is how, I can't even imagine how different things would be if I would have had several semesters, but I'm talking from just having him for one semester. He would come into a critique in, say, Levi Reed Family Circus this morning, you know, in the newspaper, Funnies. And we were all just kind of bewildered and, no, I didn't catch it, you know, and he just sat there for a while and he was like, I just can't make sense of that. He goes, that is the most perplexing thing to me. And he kind of looked around the room and he was like, okay, it's in the Funnies, but it's never funny, you know? And he's like, is this guy doing this on purpose, you know? He didn't quite know how to make it, you know? So that was just an example of one of the sort of backdoor ways of him teaching us, because he knew what was going on, you know? But a few weeks later would pass, he'd be like, anybody read Family Circus this morning? You know? No. You know? So he was basically talking about this sort of like construct, you know, of these expectations that are set, you know? I'm going to flip to the Funnies page, and it's going to be funny, you know. And so here's this wrench that's thrown into that that whole setup, and it's kind of unsettling, you know. And I think that it's a strategy he uses in his work quite a bit. But coming back from being out of town and being with my father and looking at this show. I mean, the show really is a lot about that constant flow, just of incessant brain chatter, you know, and sort of revising thoughts and your thinking being so fluid and ever-changing, you know, nothing static. You know, you have these instruments to, you know, measure things or find your way in the world, you know, such as sort of global diagrams behind you, grids. There's some sort of water measurement over there on that piece. But, you know, if you've taken two tape measures, you know, and tried to measure the same thing, you're probably going to get two slightly different measurements, you know. So it's talking about kind of these attempts at perfection or certainty, you know. And I think the uncertainty principle, chaos theory and principle of uncertainty, I think it is, right? Yeah. Which is basically this discovery that, you know, you can't measure, you can't measure the speed and location of a moving particle. You can measure one or the other. So it depends on what tool you're going to measure with, and a lot of these works sort of operate in that dialogue. It depends on where you're coming from. It depends on what angle you're looking at this work from. You know, like I came in and just because things are so fresh on my mind with my father, I come in with like that very much in my head. So I have a different experience with the work now than I did 15 years ago when I was like, all this text, you know, he calls himself a painter. You know, I mean, I just like, and what's so funny is like art can really reveal where you are. It can really reveal your interior, not only as an artist, but also as a collector or a art enthusiast, you know, how you read the work. So, yeah. I'm sorry.
This may be another stage of what you like in art, not in art, but later.
Mm-hmm.
To understand the history, take me to a different level.
Totally, yeah. I think, you know, what excites me about art and what attracts me to sort of working in it is just that thing that happens. It's like, wow, you know, I'm revisiting some of these things 15 years later, I'm a completely different person, you know? And my ideas about, you know, what constitutes a good work has changed. And one of the things that sort of defines that for me is usually as soon as I, like, lay down some sort of law, I can think of a million things that can refute it, but is that, you know, art when it's open, you know, when there's not a conclusion, it really allows you to, like, move with it and be with it, and it expands with you, you know, it expands with your growth, and it challenges you in new ways. And so, you know, you come back and revisit something 5-10 years later and you have a different experience. I mean, that's really mystical, you know, it's a really mystical experience. So, let's see. And you all feel free to jump in if you've got any questions. Just, the mouth is going and the mind is not sure what's being said. Which I love some of these things. I mean, I love Vernon's sense of humor. You know, it's like I look at his work and, you know, there's always... even though Vernon is the artist, you know, it's not some sort of, and we associate, you know, chalk drawings with Vernon, but you know, I always like these sort of added things about these, you know, needing these prosthetic eyeballs, just from the artist being so fatigued or using up all their I guess visual kryptonite, you know. I'm forgetting anything. I know you and I kind of talked.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Well, you know, I don't know. We did have a conversation earlier. I'm kind of interested in this notion when you were talking about being a graduate student and how that was such a deconstructive process and really how unsettling that can be when you don't know that's what you're going into. But it sounds like that Vernon taught in a way that, of course, would require that, or it enables or aids that deconstructive process. But it also seems to me that that's also what makes art.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's almost like understanding this work, or not even understanding it, knowing full well that you can understand this work,
mm-hmm.
but engaging it anyway would be similar to the experience of working with him as a student,
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Yeah, I mean... well, like the first time I had my work up on the wall, I had it with two other painters, and there were some sort of hybrid forms students also in there taking the class, even though this was deemed a graduate painting class, and which made that a much richer experience for me. It really kind of opened my world up to some new ways of thinking, and so. It was funny because Vernon looked at me and he's like, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Missouri." And then he looked at this other painter, Ross. "Where are you from?" "Nebraska," you know. And then this girl, Peggy. She's from Kansas. And he just sat there for a long time. He's like, "Look, you children of the corn need to get out and look at some art, you know." And You know, and so that's how class was. You know, it's like you knew it was coming, you know, and everybody, you know, everybody got it, you know. So it wasn't something that you really personalized, you know. It was like, for some of us, it was like getting the straight dope, you know. It was like, just let me have it, you know, so I can grow, you know. I mean, in high school, you've got teachers that are like, don't ever change your style, you know, and I know that happens because I taught drawing classes to undergraduate art students, and I would make some cry. That was the weirdest thing, is I was making people cry just because I thought, they want to know the truth, right, you know. But anyway, so it wasn't a real, like, nurturing, gentle, you know, critique. But it was good stuff, and all of my classmates really have gone on to do pretty amazing things in art and technology, and, you know, just kind of went out of there looking at the world a little bit differently than they came in. But as far as what I was doing in art, you know, not only was he coming by the studio and saying, hey, you should go check out this artist. Have you seen this artist? You know, and really kind of opening up my world to what was going on in contemporary art. It was funny because I didn't want to look at his work very much because I didn't want to become one of those people that said, oh, you studied with Albers, you know. So anyway, I kept kind of my distance from knowing too much about his work. And the funny thing is, reading the catalog for the show, you know, it's like, wow, you know, I was so lost that these narrative paintings that I was doing, I just basically, they were sort of these free-floating animals and using these instruments for navigation, you know, these telescopes, and, you know, it was all about trying to find your way, you know. And, yeah, go figure, you know. But Vernon was like, so what's wrong with that? He goes, why don't you just use that? You know, that's what you're experiencing now, you know, and this is your world. So it kind of started building up my confidence, but I was numbering these paintings, like, okay, I had to do 10 paintings this one semester, and I was in such a place of despair and self-loathing with my paintings that I would, like, hide these numbers in them, you know, like in, you know, in, like, children's books where I'll be like, you know, find the, I don't know, sailboat in this picture or whatever. So I was hiding these numbers, and I mentioned that to him, and he's like, huh. And he said, well, if you're not going to use it, I am, you know. And so, but he was using it long ago. It was a way for him to tell me that was kind of a cool idea without saying, I do that, you know. But like in some of his maps, if you look closely, like there's a painting that has Japan, the country of Japan, and it's in the shape of an upside down Godzilla, you know. So he does these things where, you know, when you really look at his work, you think he's probably having a great time in the studio, although it's like really intense, beautifully crafted work, you know. I have once. I can't remember why. It's I think it's pretty orderly, you know. It's big. And yeah, it's a huge studio. I went over there, I think, when Helen Altman was working for him as a studio assistant. And so it's kind of fun to see all those birds on the wall and think about, you know, those influences as well, you know. So let's see if I can find some of these other pieces. One of the other things that struck me in this exhibition is just how incredibly strategic and artfully, the whole exhibition so thoughtfully laid out, you know. I just these all the works sort of like kind of speak to themselves, you know? Like I was thinking about this piece this morning, the sort of like radio transmission, you know? It's like, you know, a lot of, all these works are really about just communication, you know? And how do we transfer information and ideas to each other? And if you think about like Morse code, you know, which is really interesting. I think there's a painting in here. It's called what? It uses electronic low frequency.
Where she's looking, trying to find where her her boyfriend, her husband has been disappearing to now.
Oh, but yeah, isn't that great though?
Yeah, so I know. I just thought about the relationship of those two. Yeah.
So, like this piece over here. So, just the Cliff Notes version of the story. Yeah. Sorry, Vernon. The girlfriend's boyfriend is always disappearing with the car. When he comes back, the push button stations are always set on different stations, and she doesn't want to confront him, so she drives around in the car trying to match up the signal to where it is, where it's set on the dial, you know. And I love that sort of story within a painting. I mean, all of that just is really rich, you know. That's why it's like you can just come back to these and think about them at a gazillion different angles.
Yeah, and the television stick map, which gets back to your whole measuring device, the idea of everything trying to make sense out or uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like such an arbitrary and precarious way of uncertainty, but it's a way that actually works and is actually,
Yeah, and I love the way that this, you know, is this piece is tilted at the same angle in this piece, but yet it's got markers for, you know, this is if it was straight, if it was level, you know, just kind of. You know.
That's awesome that you recognize that, Marty, because I don't know how many people actually recognize the relationship that Vernon is going to be pretty quick to point it out, which to me says that we have quite a bit of that modern group that
mm-hmm.
As well.
Sure.
And I think it's your modern group that can recognize that.
Right. also, this referencing a Polaroid, you know, to those of you who are familiar with Polaroids and that ink around the edges that always seemed to be there after you'd pull off that, not the positive, but the negative strip. And then there was something else, you know, the other thing about Vernon was like, he made you really accountable for your materials, you know, so it was like, I've never noticed this before, but I questioned why these are stapled on the side. I mean, it's you don't really see that very often, and why are they stapled? Well, if we're looking at it horizontally, why would they not be stapled vertically? And that kind of like echoes that whole notion of measurement. You know, it's like brought it around the side of the painting. So in some of his works, you know, I think that, you know, I didn't look over here, but yeah. And that may be me just completely reading into something that's not there, but it's something that I noticed just because being a painter, you know, those are things you try to hide, you know.
Well, and because he has you looking for so much, like you're, you know, him adopting your idea of the number.
Right.
That's one of his devices is to have you invested in looking. So yeah, maybe you're making something out of nothing, but he's, you know, it's his fault.
Yeah. Right.
And that's excessive. There's no way of that.
Well, I hesitate to, be too certain about anything, with the work, because it is so open and you don't know what he was thinking. One thing I really noticed that on that same idea of materials and like how the materials can have meaning is this piece right here, this plastic comma. He's left the edge around it and this top part right there, that speaks, And what does that speak about? That connotates, has a mass production. There was a mold made for this, That's where the material seeped out of the edge of the mold, So there's another element in here that's like trying to get your attention, or at least you thinking about the sort of idea of mass production, Why is that there, Well, and really,
I think it indicates there is another one that continues this to another scene.
Mm-hmm. Quite possible. Well, yeah, you got it right there for sure, And the other thing that's kind of interesting is like now we're in this sort of digital realm, And how does this affect his work now, And images that are digital. Libraries and museums are in a constant race to try to keep everything updated to the right current software and having the right audio technology from long ago to play that or a 16 millimeter projector for film, that'll still work and you can't get parts for anymore. So, it's interesting how, technology also affects what's going on with the work as well, And it also kind of talks about image degradation too. Like if you go over to this out of Africa area, here are these, there's this, first I thought this was a flying bird, but it's like a swinging monkey, and here's another swinging monkey, but there's not enough pixel information to make that clear. So it's a, you think about that being low res and you can't enlarge it very much, it's a small image, a small amount of information, same thing here. This is like, sort of, now I think about it even more, it's like bitmap technology, which is on its way out as well, But incredibly influenced by film, literature. He just kind of accesses everything that's out there, science, technology, art history. I haven't heard the slide whistle piece. Is it on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Okay. It's on cue, yeah. Which is really incredible that, like, you can come in here and then you start having these audio experience, with the work as well, And there's something about that piece and a lot of this work that almost, for me, almost illustrates this fine line between comedy and tragedy, Just throwing that out there.
I think that's important. You said that earlier, and I don't know that I thought of it, but thinking of, your experience and others' experience of Vernon as a teacher, it also gives you something as serious as Heart of Darkness, but there are humor elements that make you able to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start questioning even what you're kind of laughing about or what you find humorous. And if you're right, it's amazing where he can take you just with the mention of Family Circus, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, and also, like, if you think about, you know, that you tell a story, and then that story gets retold, and that story gets retold, and that story, you know, all of a sudden, like, it's, you know, from this end to this person, it's like almost unrecognizable, you know, where it got to, you know, being told again and again. So it's how we, you know, perceive and assimilate information, and also, you know, what you filter out, what's important to you, you know, those sorts of things. So, let me see if there's any. So there was one day in his class that really stood out to me while I was thinking about talking to you guys today. Was it was about mid-semester, and he goes, you know, there's statistics on art students, you know, and what they end up doing after they get out of college. And I said, 75% of you will, within 5 years of graduating, will be doing completely art unrelated, you know, jobs that are unrelated to art, and you will no longer be even practicing what you do. You know, you'll completely given it up. And then there was another percentage of, like, and then so many of you will do this or that, and, you know, and then 1% of you may become a great artist, you know. And where the class was really quiet, and I talked to a friend about 5 years ago that was in that class with me, and we both brought up that day, and he said, you remember that day, you know, where he said, we're all going to quit, you know, and not be doing this anymore, and he said, yeah, and he goes, what were you thinking? And I said, I'm going to be that 1%. and my friend said, yeah, me too. You know, and so it's just this kind of comical thing where everybody's sitting there real quiet going, everybody else is a loser. But it's going to be me.
And he would never tell you that. He set you up.
Yeah, yeah. It was really pretty funny. But he had a way of, like, teaching where you didn't feel like he was teaching. You come to your studio and you just kind of talk about stuff and have a lot of analogies and, you know, go look at this artist, go look at that artist, read this. I think he had recommended that I read some Italo, Calvino, and Borges, you know. Just to kind of get things moving and creative juices sort of flowing and ideas, you know. You just seems like it's hard to make art just by looking at art, you know. There's got to be, life has to come in at some point, you know. So, where are we, Terry, on time? Are we doing all right?
I'm doing great.
Okay.
Stop or go.
Okay.
I liked your point. You were talking to Charlie before the tour started about the overview of the cranium. If you could maybe share that and elaborate on it. I don't know. This one makes me think of it. They probably could do that with a lot of it, but that idea.
Yeah, I mean, the first painting that you see in the, when you walk up the stairs, you know, it's like, it's got the three spheres. I mean, you can look at that painting so many different ways, and then just thinking about his work, I was also thinking about, you know, like an overhead view of of the cranium, you know. When you go back out, you can kind of look at that shape again, but that shape comes up a lot, and Vernon talks about, you know, Mickey Mouse comes up a lot. This painting always makes me laugh because of the placement, you know, of Mickey Mouse where the genitals would be. So
I know when you find something like that, it makes you want to invest more in looking. Like, what else am I missing?
Yeah, yeah.
Recognize Mickey Mouse's
symbol,
the figure.
Yeah, you know, the like, why would, you know, why would this stack of chalk be up here? You know, and I think about, like, when you're in the classroom, teacher will be at the board, and then usually students are called up to continue to work on the board, you know. So I just think that's kind of almost sort of feels like some sort of passing of the torch, you know, you know, borrowing from others, you know, and almost recognizing what's come before you, you know, and what's going to be ahead of you, you know. So
yeah, I've wondered about those. Painting, the little rectangle, like, is that a reference to a Bryce Martin or some other minimalist
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know, very different type of work in his own, or is it something else? I mean, maybe it's not at all.
Right, yeah. And, like, I love the placement of, you know, these two squares, and then you get into this gridded piece, and then and this piece, you know, and they really start, you know, you walk around the room and you can really create this pretty interesting dialogue back and forth with all of these pieces. I just find this piece really fascinating because it sort of illustrates that whole notion of, like, you know, it depends on where you're coming from, where you stand, you know. Where you're standing in relation to something else, you know, where you are in your life in relation to what's being presented before you, you know, how do you respond to that? And so I love it that if you stand, like, right at this corner, you know, that becomes a two-dimensional, that painting becomes two-dimensional, you know, painted on a three-dimensional object. And then it's for me, you know, there's no measurement on this piece, you know. It's like the missing piece of information, you know. And I think that's kind of important, you know, with a lot of modernism. To me, sometimes kind of feels like a closed loop, you know. It's all about the formal aspects, and by just placing that cube out of there, it says something else, you know. So I don't know. For me, that's how I like to go at these things, and I, you know, really enjoy looking at art. I guess that's why I do try to do it every day. Anytime. Maybe we'll look at the flies and call it a day. So I figured we'd wrap up with this piece with the flies. I first saw, actually, I think it was this piece at a show at Gerald Peters' gallery, and I think it was about 10, 12 years ago, and I read the catalog on this piece, and it talks about, you know, once the idea is there, the piece is created. It's almost like, you know, when you're born, you're handed your death sentence, you know? So it talks about image, you know, art decomposing and those sorts of issues. And these flies are cast epoxy, I believe. But the significance of the flies, from what I read in the catalog, is the sort of, you know, how flies just randomly, they're all over the place, and they move and land at whatever. It's also kind of pointing out the same sort of thing that the other paintings are doing, is just differently as far as, like, your trajectory of thought and how disconnected that is, you know, at all times. You know, you're like, especially now in the age of multitasking, you know, and then there's the song you can't get out of your head, and then you're, you know, so it's a really interesting piece, and I can't really speak to all of this, but I did find this interesting. The Milevich piece. See, I'm going blank, Terry. As far as, like, period.
The Russian construction.
Yes. Yeah. Where it's like abstraction being sort of boiled down to purity of form being this sort of spiritual. For spiritual dialogue, but then there's this, like, dot of paint right in the middle of it that interrupts it. You know, I mean, it's got to be on purpose. I can't imagine that not being on purpose. So there's always little things like that. I think I also read, I don't know if this painting has it on that, but you probably remember this piece, the That's All, Folks. There's a different painting. It's blue, but that imagery kind of comes from that, you know. And when you sort of look at these drops of paint and whatever, it really brings you back to this is a flat surface. This is a painting. This is on canvas. You know, it sort of messes with your way to. Or the illusion of the painting, you know, especially this painting right in the middle of it. So. Well, I'd say that just to wrap up, Vernon, I feel like has contributed heavily to the way our art community in this area and in Texas. I think has been influenced quite a bit by him and the students that he's had. I was reading in Dwell magazine about a week ago, and there were two of his students that have started this technology company called Subports up in Brooklyn. And basically you can take your... if you want to buy something from, these are kind of geared towards indie vendors, but the vendor gets a code, and then they display the code next to, it's like a numerical code. They display that code next to the merchandise that they're trying to sell. And then you can just, like, text message that code, and you have purchased the piece. You know, it's like, bypassing computers, everything. And Will Robeson, a guy that was in my class with Vernon, is quoted as saying, well, we basically want to destroy the retail model and build it back up, you know? So, I mean, it's like, that's the kind of influence that is out there with sort of the groundwork that he's laid for his students. So it's sort of manifesting itself, you know, in a lot of different ways.
Well, thank God not everybody except 1%.
Yeah, no kidding, yeah. So anyway, well, I'm happy to answer questions, or we can. I'll be done yakking here.
Are there any questions for Marty? That was so good, Marty. Thank you so much.
Thank you.